C1C. Number 3A.
Yesterday we started out to investigate the nature of reality, and so that we can only understand reality properly as structural and not as an accumulation of isolated facts. And now this has its implication for us, namely that we also interpret reality structurally and not atomistically. So I come to the point of interpretation in order to introduce really structural interpretation of a text. Really, the great question each one who is sitting here is to ask oneself the following, so as that we can see if this weak work which we have in front of us, if it has any success, if it has achieved anything, by comparing what we know today as a text of the 9th and 10th chapter and what we'll know after a week about the 9th and 10th chapter. This difference really should then be the value of my teaching, the value actually of a true method of interpretation. We can ask ourselves today a few questions, namely the following. Most of us who are sitting here know Christian Science for quite a while. Some perhaps for a few years, some for 10 years, mostly I guess perhaps 10, 20, 30 and more years. And in those many, many years each one has studied the textbook earnestly, sincerely, has studied the textbook practically daily, not just here and then, a little bit, so that we can say we have put a lot of study, of love, of interest, of effort into a book that only contains 600 pages. And therefore, we should ask ourselves, if we have for 20, 30, 40 and more years studied the same book over and over, have we understood that book? I guess we should have understood it if we compare it with the study of any other subject. If we would study for 50 years a little textbook, say on geology or on chemistry, I think we should know pretty well what is in that book. Is that so with the textbook? The concrete question is, do we know at least, the order of the chapters of the textbook? And I would say that if I would ask Christian Scientists in general, there would be very, very few who would know the order of the chapters. And if they would know the order of the chapters, it would be because they have a good memory and would have learned it by heart or can remember it by heart. Would they know, this would be the next question, would they know why they are in that order and why not in another order? And there you can be absolutely sure that they would say the order doesn't matter. If the order does not matter, then this textbook is not an ordered presentation of the subject of God, and is therefore an admission that God is not ordered, or at least admit that Mrs. Eddy presented the subject of God or of reality or of being in a disordered way. Do we know the order of the chapters? Each one can ask himself this right away as a starting point for the week's work. Do we know why they are in that order or not? Each one can answer for himself and know that if he cannot answer, he has therefore spent 10, 20, 30, 40 years on a textbook with apparently a consciousness that is not scientific. We can go a step further and say we have studied that textbook over so and so many years sincerely. There is no doubt about the sincerity. Do we know how each chapter is built up? Do we know how the chapter begins and with which proposition does a chapter begin? How then does Mrs. Eddy develop that proposition? And do we know to what conclusion at the end of the chapter she arrives? Do we know that? If I would call out and say, please tell me how the chapter on some objections answered starts out, how it develops, how it culminates, I think you can ask this question any of the hundreds of thousands of Christian scientists in the world, and he will not be able to answer it. Which again shows that he has read and read and read without reading, without understanding. And if he says, well, there is no order in it, then we must admit to ourselves that we believe that Mrs. Eddy presented being in a disordered way. And would we like to do that? Somehow, intuitively, we feel that what Mrs. Eddy has given is a terrific, great, ordered sense of being, and yet we admit that we don't know that order, nor were we trying to find that order. Namely, the question of an ordered text has never really been raised in the movement. Are we not coming to very crucial questions about Christian Science? Do we really expect that Mrs. Eddy has written a textbook of 600 pages where she just jotted down some thoughts that came to her without any relationship between the sentences, between the subjects, without having any ordered line of leading the student from the first chapter to the last chapter? Do we really believe that? And intuitively, we don't believe it. But why have we never asked that question? And before one asks that question, one will not get an answer. And these are the questions I ask myself when I was at the university, and I was used to read a textbook orderly, and would see that if I see order in a textbook, that it would open up much quicker. And nobody in the whole movement whom I touched, I asked teachers, lecturers, practitioners, church members, etc., etc., and they just were not interested even in the question, quite apart from being able to answer these questions. But these questions are the questions that we have also to ask ourselves right now and say, could I answer them? We are going to devote only one week to two chapters. See? And those two chapters cover perhaps about 80 pages. That's about one eighth of the whole textbook. So that in 8 weeks, if we would study 8 weeks together, we could have an overall ordered sense of the whole textbook, whereas we have spent now 10, 20, 30, 40 years and have not seen any order in the text. So if at the end of this week we feel that we have now a good insight and an overall view of those two chapters, now, so to say, without opening the textbook, know more or less the big lines that run through in an ordered way, wouldn't you feel that that method, therefore, is a valid method, is a workable method? I guess we could say yes. So this is the problem of this week, and we'll see how we can develop that method of reading. Actually, once one has got that method of reading the text, it flows afterwards much easier. I remember that once I had really the tonality of the system, it had taken me at that time about 3 months to decode the whole textbook. That what is in the structure of the Christian Science textbook in my book, that was the work of about 3 months. And you know that when one does something for the first time, it usually takes much longer than the second generation that comes along. But I just want to show you that once one has the tonality of the system, it isn't really such a terrific thing to decode the textbook. But without that tonality consciousness, nothing will help. No matter how many hours we put into it, no matter how much effort we put into it, the very fact is that the student of Christian Science, when he opens the textbook and reads paragraph after paragraph, that after half an hour he cannot tell what line of reasoning he has been contemplating, what line of reasoning Mrs. Eddy has shown. He just can't do it. I have never met anybody who could do it. So apparently we find in this method really a pearl without price and should value it according to that. Why is it that we can read a novel in an evening and know what is in it? I think because a novel speaks our human language. And because a novel, say, is written in a linear way, it usually tells us a story. And we are used to think in that way, from cause to effect, along a line. And that book is written in the same language in which we have been brought up. If we read a textbook of any science, it may take us a bit longer than to read a novel. It already needs closer investigation, namely, it already needs that we begin to see the interrelationship of the various facts or chapters that are presented, and we go from one page to the next and go back to the page before. We begin to compare, we begin to make, to construct relationship of what we have, what we read on page, say, 250 with what we have been reading, say, on page 75 in the textbook and see, oh yes, these really go together. There I find the reason for what is stated later. So a textbook already needs a better and a closer knowledge of relationship, and therefore is already introducing understanding. But with the Christian Science textbook, it is even more complicated, because it is a textbook and not a novel, but it is written in a language that is unknown to us. The deep structural language, that language which lies beneath the surface language of English or of German, that deep structural language is a spiritual language that has nothing to do with English, has nothing to do with the meaning of the terms as we find them in a dictionary. It has to do with spiritual ideas, and therefore only as we learn the spiritual language we really can understand the language. Mrs. Eddy has translated from the spiritual language the message into English language, and in order to understand the spiritual message, we somehow have to translate the English language back into the spiritual language. We have seen how terms that are used in Christian Science and in the textbook have a completely different meaning than what they have in ordinary language. If in ordinary language we speak about intelligence, we mean something very different than when we speak about intelligence in Christian Science. Because in Christian Science, we see that a term is always determined by its relationship with its environment. Therefore, intelligence is only then intelligence in the meaning of Christian Science when it reflects all other ideas of the seven synonymous terms. Therefore, the term intelligence has a different connotation than in the Webster Dictionary. It is purified, so to say, through its reflection in the seven synonymous terms. Therefore, we have greater difficulty in understanding the textbook, because we have to read it spiritually and have to know the spiritual language. Also, we begin to see more and more, that we have seen yesterday with structuralism, that the value of a term, of any term, is wholly determined, really, by its total environment, just as we have seen with the bird, that the value of the term bird is determined completely by its relationship with the whole world, and is only then bird when all the relationships existing come together and at the point of intersection bring forth a certain phenomena called a bird. And the moment those relationships change, the bird will change. Therefore, we can see that the text of the textbook must be read really structurally and not atomistically. And that brings me to a further subject, namely to the question of linear reading and structural reading. Of linear reading and structural reading. Yes. How is it when we think? Isn't it so that when we think, that somehow our thinking process in the human is really a linear process. We think from one term to the next term, and in this way we construct a sentence, and so we have syntax in grammar, and syntax in grammar is really ruled mostly by the linear thinking of cause to effect. That's why we usually have in a sentence a subject, the word, then a verb, the Christ, the expression of that, a verb, then Christianity, the object about which the verb says something, and this together makes then a meaning, a sentence. And these sentences go along that linear way, and therefore is more or less a time concept. It runs through time. Our thinking goes time-wise from one point to the next. The one is thinking quicker and the other a bit slower, but both are a concept of time. So reading really starts usually that one learns first to read a term. In modern education it's a bit different now. They already start much more with a holistic sense, but let's say when we went to school, we first had to learn the alphabet, and then afterwards one thing more, a word, and then afterwards we had to learn word after word, and so we began to read sentences. Can you see it's a constant flow, time flow, in a horizontal, linear way, and it's a way usually we think, so that writing and thinking is usually synchronized, and it is a time sense. If you look back into the earlier years of studying Christian Science, I think we did something similar, except that we did not have to learn the alphabet first, but the terms. And we were mostly first contemplating terms like intelligence, like supply, like substance. And we are taking the concordance and we are looking up everything about this one term in order to find out what that one term means in Christian Science. That's the use of a concordance, that one can find all the references on one term. And so, as far as I look back in those years of the beginning of studying Christian Science, this was one of the main activities in trying to understand Christian Science. Then one began to contemplate naturally sentences and perhaps whole paragraphs, and usually when one were considering whole paragraphs, one was already at sea. One couldn't quite see always how Mrs. Eddy jumped from one sentence to the next, why that should be reasonable, why it should be cause and effect relationship, that the next sentence after the preceding one just didn't seem to have any connection with the preceding one, just seemed to jump in right from outside and say, here I am, as a new sentence, and that gave the impression that Mrs. Eddy's writing is atomistically, that she puts just one aphorism next to the next aphorism, and we already had difficulty in reading linearly on and on. I would say that changed quite a bit The moment John Dolly introduced order, the concept of order, something that has never really been contemplated in the Christian Science field up to that time, when he began to see that ideas really should unfold in order, that if there is a heavenly order, then the text should go along a heavenly spiritual order. And so he found that, for instance, the days of creation would give a spiritual order, that the ideas of the first day of creation were prerequisites for the second day of creation, that the second day of creation was again a prerequisite for the third day of creation, that one began to see that spiritually one couldn't start with the third day of creation, that would not make sense, that the third day of creation without the second day, just jumping from the first day to the third day, would not make sense, that something would be missing in between spiritually. And so we had that long period that went over years and years, where the student became acquainted, so to say, with thinking in spiritual order, and therefore beginning to see in the text spiritual order of law, of cause and effect. This was then developing to the point where something quite new happened. When one began to realize that actually the textbook, even if one tried to read it spiritually ordered along a horizontal linear way, that something was missing, that there were still quite a lot of sentences interject into the big trend of that order, which didn't seem to make sense within that ordered line of reasoning. It was round about 1950 and beginning of the 50s that one began to see structure, the meaning of structure. And structure naturally means that we have to do in structure with two axes of reading. One axis goes along that horizontal linear way in time, but also that in a structure you have intersection, which means that there are vertical intersections, and that we also have to be aware that the text not only has to give linear, horizontal reasoning, but also vertical reasoning. And this brought us really to the structural interpretation of the text, which would therefore comprise at the same time a consciousness that is able to read not only in one dimension, but at least in two, three, and four and more dimensions at the same time.